Hello and welcome to Salesforce Architecture Talk with Gaurav and Satya. This is the place for all architects, consultants, and developers in the Salesforce ecosystem. In today's episode, we are delighted to be joined by our Salesforce CTA and MVP, one and only Carl Brundage from Odeseva. This is one of our key episodes of Season 1, where we are discussing about CTA preparation strategies. We learned about Carl's journey to Salesforce and his pathway to CTA. And while discussing that, Carl shared his why for the exam and great tips and tricks for all future CTA candidates. We hope you enjoy this episode. And if you do, please do like and subscribe for future episodes. Without further ado, let's get started.
All right, I guess we're on. Welcome, Carl, the legend of CTA. Thanks for coming on our show. We really, really appreciate it. I know for sure that many people in the Salesforce ecosystem know you personally, but for people who don't and who are listening to this podcast, Carl, let me do a quick introduction, right? Carl is the principal architect at Odeseva. Odeseva is a data management company. While Carl is an MVP, most valued professional, and also CPA. Now, I think I'm right here, and Gaurav, correct me if I'm wrong, he's the only person which has both the MVP status and CTA credential. That is very, very rare in this ecosystem.
There's actually a few of us now, that have both. So yeah, I'm not the only one. I have some good peers that actually have helped me along my journey to becoming a CTA.
Okay, great. I didn't know that. So you see, you learn something new every day. But I think you were probably one of the first ones to get both these credentials. So I think that was in my mind previously. But you've been working as a Salesforce architect for a very, very long time. So we'd like to know a little bit more about you. Personally, I met you for the first time at Dreamforce, the Odeseva dinner, and then saw you at the architect keynote as well. So would definitely like to know more about your journey and how you got into this space.
Yeah, definitely. And welcome, Carl.
Thank you.
Let me also welcome you on this episode of our podcast. So we are definitely very, very, very excited to have you. As Satya mentioned, you were there in the Dreamforce this year. You presented in the Dreamforce with Parker Harris, which is which is a huge achievement, and with all the other CTA candidates in the architect keynote. So that was an incredible event, and we loved it. We are really, really very happy to have you on the podcast this time. So let's talk about now about your journey, get into your journey, where exactly that this all started, how did you get into technology, what was the first time when you realized that technology career is the path for you, so and how you landed into Salesforce. I think let's deep dive straight away.
Sure, thank you. It's a pleasure being here. If I think about that question, there's probably a few inflection points in my life that kind of led me to where I am now. I definitely have always been interested in technology, even as a kid. I was using a Commodore 64 and programming games on it. So that led to seeking out an engineering career inside of college when I went to university. And I actually did my degree in computer engineering. And at one point, I was going to really go into chip design. I had some discussions with Intel. And what happened to me at that point was I realized if I go down this path, it's many, many, many years until I have an impact in what I'm doing. You know, maybe after 20 years, I'm responsible for a little memory chip or something like that. So I decided to try the software side, and I went to work for a small company as an intern. And it was one of those companies where you show up and they're like, "We think you have enough parts in the server room for you to build your own computer," right? So, first job was to put together your own computer. I didn't have a mouse for a while, but what I was doing was I was writing the help manual for our customers. So I was learning HTML and building something. And that kind of clicked for me and said, wow, this software side, if I do this, I can have a bigger impact much earlier in my career. And that was really interesting to me. So my last year in college, I kind of focused more on the computer science side of computer engineering, and then went to work building data warehouses and insurance for insurance companies. So that part of it, and then a visual tool in VB, Visual Basic 6, and then ASP.NET, SQL Server, Oracle. So really strong technical foundation to get started. So kind of inflection point one, you know, picking the software side. From there, I went to another company that was focused on CRM, but for life sciences. And I worked all different angles of the data side, running a SaaS practice, installing updates, much like when we have a Salesforce update coming. I deployed customers on the iPad. All of this was really great experience. But the thing that kind of stuck with me was, if something happens to my job, all my knowledge really only applies to maybe a customer that wants to hire me. You know, there wasn't anywhere else with the proprietary technology that appealed to me. And that's where somebody said, hey, I'm working at this partner. They have, they're an SI. They want to do a product. They're working on Salesforce. You want to come join us? I said, ooh, this is interesting. This is something now that has broader applicability. So that's what brought me into the Salesforce ecosystem in 2014.
Awesome. Awesome. I think that's a great foundation that you had very early part of your career. And then I think landing into Salesforce ecosystem was fantastic. So let's talk a little bit more on how did you get into your Salesforce to CTA journey, and then how that CTA has transformed your career to land into Odyssey. I think we are very keen to learn the impact what CTA has brought into your career.
So it was interesting. When I started with this company, it was another smaller company. And they were in a facility that they had been for a few years, but there was a revitalization effort in the downtown area. And they were refabbing a building down there, and they were eventually going to move in. But when I first started, everybody was in the main building, and the team that was building the product, there was four folks on the Salesforce side, were in another little building that you had to walk through a room and get into a conference room. And they were not feeling the love, right? Because the company still was doing non-Salesforce stuff. They were kind of the only ones working on it. And to me, coming in, again, I didn't know Salesforce well at the time. Most of these individuals had four or five certifications. So at the time, There were six, you know, they had everything but CTA. So they were very well credentialed. I felt like I needed to show my commitment to the team and say, look, I'm here. You're not going to be neglected anymore. I'm with you. I'm part of the team. And that started me on the certification journey where, you know, over a few months, I got most of the main ones, developer, admin, advanced admin, sales and service cloud consultant. So pretty much everything but CTA at that time. And that really helped us bond as a team. And we were doing some pretty cool things. We built a lot of commerce apps on side of Salesforce. So as an ISV, you could go in and you could set up storefronts and you could sell things on communities or on Heroku at the time. And what I kind of stopped and looked at was, okay, the only thing left for me is CTA. That's not going to happen. Like, no way. There's nothing to help me get there. There's just this big kind of, you do a self-certification, which I totally failed. And then you took an exam and then you had this big review board. And it was very, very hidden. You know, it was a mystery as to what did you need to do? How did you need to prepare? So for a few years after that, I didn't even really consider it.
This was the time when the board was a three-step exam where there was a multiple choice and you just go straight to the board, isn't it?
Yes, you had the honest self-assessment, which if you weren't honest, you could pass. But if you actually reflected on your skills and abilities, you would say, okay, no, I'm not quite ready. But what changed for me was the pyramid, right? This is the time when then the designer exams came out and we had the pyramid there. And what that gave me was the stepping stones of the framework to say, okay, this is what I need to know. And it definitely opened up things that I wasn't aware of on the Salesforce side. Had I dealt with single sign-on before? Yes, but not in the Salesforce world. Did I do a lot of multi-currency? Yes, but not necessarily multilingual. Or had I did a lot with large data volumes? No, not at the time. So there was a lot of things like that that it exposed me to in just preparing for all the designer exams that were necessary in order to be ready to go for CTA.
Got it. I remember taking that multi-choice exam back in the day. And I took it just like that. Like, you know, I'd been working in the ecosystem for like 4 or 5 years back then. And I took the exam and I passed. And I'm like, wow, I'm probably ready to take the, take the board. I was not ready back then, but I did not take the board back then, thank God. But yeah, it was, as you see the evolution of this exam as well, right? At the time when you passed the board, I think support-wise, everything was very limited, especially for external candidates, right? I don't recollect any like there are a lot of forums right now, coaching that happens for external candidates. Nothing was there back in the day. So kudos to you to getting on the board and getting a CPA back then, right?
Yes, I think it was the early beta days of trying out different things to help people out. Yes, there was the designer exam. There was a couple of online courses. They were free once you got through the designers, system architect and application architect, which were very foundational in giving me a framework to approach the exam. So that was helpful. There was maybe 6 scenarios that were out there that you could practice, and some of them were more of the retake, some of them were the full. So there wasn't a lot of those resources. And I went through not the first 601 class, but the like second, hey, we tried 601. We think this is a good idea. Why don't you come down to Atlanta and we'll see how this works. And what happened for me was that was very eye-opening in a couple of ways of, yes, it's the technical aspect, but it's also the communication and the way that you present yourself. And it was also a situation where they had external CTAs in, and this was Andy Oganoff, who's at Accenture, also an MVP and CTA, was one of the persons in the class, and he's the one that kind of pulled me aside and said, look, the way you present, like, you're not far off. You should go for this. And that really helped me get over that mental hurdle of, well, you know, it's October. I don't know that I'm ready to do it in December, maybe next year, and push me to say, all right, let's make that last minute study push and let's take that exam in December.
Yeah.
It's always great to hear the stories of the preparations on how did you prepare, and the time when you attempted, that was very early stage. So, so how did, after that, how it happened? Did you straight away went into the exam? Was it your first attempt where you got in? And then how was the outcome? How was the experience after that?
Yeah, so so the timeline, if I think about kind of when I made my final push, because I think you do a lot of things for many years that prepare you for the CTA. Some of them can be explicit, some of them are implicit. You know, if I go way back to high school, and I know I've said this before, I acted in plays, I was in musicals. The stage presence of being able to deliver and talk to people and answer questions, like, I was very comfortable with that. So I didn't feel like I had to spend time prepping that particular thing, but I did need to have my style, my framework, how I wanted to do a review board. So in August, I started really working through scenarios so that I didn't feel like I was going to embarrass myself when I went down in October, you know, it's with peers and CTAs. And leaving that, it helped me do 2 things. One, it really solidified the interconnectedness of the designer exams, where when you're kind of taking them, you see them as standalone things. Oh, this is data integration, this is data management, this is security. But as you go through that class, you're like, no, these are connected. The decision I make in security affects how I load data into the org and so forth. So I made a study plan to revisit some of those things and look at them from a connected perspective. I made a study plan to make sure I had all my flows down, so OAuth and identity provider and service provider, and then really practice the delivery of scenarios. Make sure that I'm practicing like I want to perform, the time of day, the materials that I'm using, how I went through a scenario. I didn't really do the question side of things. I didn't have somebody that was questioning me, but at least how I presented and the things that I covered, how I communicated, you know, trying to be precise and concise and all those things. So I hit it pretty hard then from Halloween, so around the end of October, to right before Christmas. I think I went December 17th to do my review board.
Wow. Excellent.
Wow. Almost the same time where we are now. So
yes.
Awesome.
What a good Christmas
so
present.
So basically, what right? we have... Yeah, exactly.
You know, we didn't talk maybe about the day of experience yet, but I left the review board in tears. I thought, like, I did terrible. These questions were impossible. And it wasn't so much that I felt bad for myself, but there's a lot of sacrifices that go into preparing for the review board. You have to be committed, right? Because you're going to give up your time, but your company has to be committed to give you some time and help support you. And then for me, especially, the family had to be committed. A lot of the things I was doing early in the morning, late at night, weekends was taking away from family time. So the thought that, you know, that my family was now going to suffer longer because I wasn't succeeding in this really weighed on me leaving it. But yes, Christmas present, I think it was the 23rd, I get the phone call, hey, congratulations, you passed. So, you know, definitely a great way to end the year.
Beautiful. Absolutely. I did touch upon this point, which is a very important point.
Yeah.
That is, while this exam says technical architect, it is a technical exam, but it is so much more than that. It's about understanding how these various different domains are connected. Are you able to articulate certain hidden aspects? For example, integration. Can you talk about security in an integration context? This interconnectedness and then presenting it in a way that judges expect you to is super critical, right? At least for me, that was the hardest part in terms of how do you hit the nail in the head so that it's super clear rather than you just beating around the bush. I feel a lot of candidates struggle. I struggled in that aspect during my early days. Was that a struggle for you at all? You mentioned that you had some background in terms of stage performances and everything. But what was the hardest bit for you in your journey?
I think my struggle was maybe a little bit different than most. Was I was doing this kind of by myself. I wasn't at a large partner. I didn't have other CTAs in my network. And I just didn't know if I was on track or not. You know, is this the right answer? Is this a reasonable answer? Is this an optimal and justified solution to something in this scenario? So kind of having that validation, and that's where the 601 class helped a little bit to bring it to me. What I really think about of how to be ready for those things, I think it comes down to two pieces. One, if you want to present at this depth, you need to know it at this depth. You know, you need to go a level deeper and really have an understanding at that level so that you can clearly articulate and explain it one level higher. So for example, if we're looking at single sign-on, you know, I started looking at URLs and how they went between different systems. And even if it was Google and using Google to authenticate into something else that had nothing to do with Salesforce, like thinking about how things went back and forth so that when I was communicating, I could be precise, saying the right things, and then I could be concise, only saying the words I needed to. And then the second piece does go to communication. And it's not just for the CTA, but there's a lot of poor communicators out there. And it usually comes from one, not thinking about the audience and what the audience needs to hear. If we apply it to a judging situation, they don't care the projects I've worked on. They don't care the background of the scenario. They don't care the actual requirement because it's on the paper in front of them, right? That you can orient them to say, I'm on 1.1, but beyond that, you don't need to read what's on the paper. They have it in front of them. So thinking about how I can communicate to them in order for them to receive the message, because it's not what you're saying as a communicator, it's what the other person is taking away. So I do spend a lot of time in my work life thinking about that audience and what they want to hear and making sure the communication is clear.
That is such a good advice. I think, Gaurav, you would agree with me as well, is I think this is an advice you could take it on your day-to-day life. Anytime you are working with your business stakeholders, you have to understand it's not what you understand or what you're conveying, is what the takeaway is from that conversation for them, right? Such an incredible advice.
Exactly. Very important advice to the candidates.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned you use 601 as a platform for you to validate your approach. Did you have a coach at the time who was helping mm-hmm. you in your journey for CTA?
No, I didn't. I didn't have a coach. I didn't have a mentor. There wasn't a study group or anything along those lines. There was a little bit after we went through 601. There was actually somebody in the class, Chris Fair, who was from the same area in Allentown that I was at. He was maybe 15, 20 minutes away from me. So there was a couple of times where we did get together afterwards, not necessarily to study, but just to talk through some different topics and go through the journeys that we were on. But for the most part, I was solo at the time.
That makes Carl's CTA even more special, isn't it?
I think it's one of the reasons I've been active in doing different things. So I have taught the 601 class. I have had people that I've done mock reviews for when they've asked, because I know the challenges of doing it by yourself. And I think the community has stepped up in the past, I get 5 years now, of providing more of those opportunities. I think a lot of the large companies have stepped up in making sure that they are having a more formalized CTA program. Obviously, inside of Salesforce, it's pretty strong. But every now and then, you do get somebody that isn't part of that, and they need that extra help. So I will volunteer my time here and there based off of what people need, so that they don't feel completely isolated.
Excellent. We do definitely cool. want to deep dive on the topic for today is really CTA prep strategy, right? I think you touched upon this point in terms of got to be mentally ready to take up this exam. And and anybody who's listening to this podcast also needs to be very clear on why they want to take up this exam. So I personally call this exam the exam of whys. And the most important why for you is your why, and why you're taking this exam. Because I've spoken to a lot of candidates who do want to take up this exam over the last few years. I think a lot of candidates struggle in terms of understanding what it really takes to get through this, this time, whether it's 6 months, 9 months, 12 months of your time. So understanding your why is important, right? Would really like to understand your why. I know you touched upon it, that you wanted to understand the platform a little bit more. You're doing some certifications. But what was your real why for this exam?
I think my why was because it was there. And it was a challenge. You ask sometimes, like, why did you climb Mount Everest? Because it is a challenge. I wasn't looking at it for all kinds of recognition. I spent more time in my career at smaller companies, which, if you reflect upon the CTA, it's probably more valued from an employer perspective if you're at a very large organization, a large customer, Salesforce. But I've been able to weave it into some of the things I've done at a smaller company that kind of still keep me hands-on and make it interesting. But the why was, am I up for this? Can I learn what I need to? Can I present myself to achieve something that is very challenging? So that's what kind of motivated me through the process, that intrinsic aspect of it, not something outside that is maybe fleeting, maybe not permanent.
I think that's a good reason. That's a good reason, definitely, for you in terms of why you wanted to attend this exam. I think it's as Satya mentioned, finding why for this exam is super super critical because it's a huge commitment, right? So, what do you think? Why other candidates really should prepare for the exams for the CTA? What is the most important why? Why they need to look at, as in why it is critical, why it's important to them?
I think when you look at what you want to do, both in the day-to-day and in the longer term in a career, that can help decide, is the CTA right for you? And what I mean by that, if Salesforce had a magic wand, they probably would go back and not call it technical architect. Yes, there's technical aspects of it, but sometimes you hear technical architect. And in my early days, I thought it was somebody that was very strong at formulating, I'll say Apex, but the structure of Apex and factory service patterns and dependency injections and how you structure the whole code aspect of it. But in the CTA world, that's not as strong of a piece from a technical architect perspective as understanding all the other places for it. So if you're looking to go and stay more on the coding side, well, no, the CTA probably isn't right for you. If you, you know, have aspirations that you want to work on large global projects or a large company and have challenges of deploying something that has consumer packaged goods and commerce and B2B commerce and all those other things, then yes, you know, that would align with what you want to do from a career perspective. And then from a day-to-day perspective, I think all of us that have CTAs, we have different roles, and there's different things in your day-to-day that you do that you like and things that you don't like. If I only did diagrams and PowerPoint all day long, I wouldn't like that. You know, that wouldn't be a job that would excite me. I still enjoy having a hands-on aspect of solving a challenge, solving a problem. You know, recently I had a customer that had 400 million records in the case object, and we needed to do an archiving on some pretty complex data models. And every other time they tried to archive, things were failing, they couldn't get data deleted, things were locking. And getting hands-on and solving that challenge, I used a lot of what I learned in the CTA, but it's very different than building a system landscape that is going to cover a global deployment. So that's the other piece is, okay, what's your day-to-day want to look like? Does this fit in? Is that a strong enough why to make the sacrifices that you need to be successful?
Right. That makes
that's
sense.
That's great advice.
It's very important. Yeah,
absolutely. It definitely makes sense. And a lot of candidates I've seen do attempt the journey for the wrong reasons, right? The few of them is like, I know someone who's been in this ecosystem for some time. So because that person got the CTS, I'm also going to go for it. They're not mentally prepared. They have not done their homework in terms of what the CTA requires. And eventually, the outcome of that then is not as desirable as they want it to be, right? And you've been in as a CTA for a long time. You have met a lot of CTAs in your journey. You must have met people who are also not CTAs, would have attempted the board before. What do you think are some of the incorrect reasons or incorrect whys that people go and take the CTA journey in your experience?
I think the first, and I don't know if it's exactly a why, and I don't see it as much now, but after I got mine, there was a huge misconception of, hey, I completed my designers, I'm ready for the CTA. And then we had to do a lot of messaging to say, well, slow down. You know, no, being able to pass the designer exams is not the same thing as being ready to even sit and attempt the CTA. So that having the experience to go with the knowledge was an important reason where we see people struggle. As far as wrong reasons, I don't know that I would say if you're doing it for X, Y, and Z, if you're doing it for that next promotion, you're wrong. What you have to look at is the motivation enough to overcome the sacrifice that you have to make? Because it's not a sacrifice usually that you're making for a day or a week. You know, if you've ever tried to lose weight, right? You do exercise, you change what you eat, and because you want that better outcome. And you can maybe sustain that for a day, a week, a month, but that's hard to do over the course of a year. And a lot of times when we're talking about people's CTA prep, you have to sustain a level of effort that affects different areas of your life for a long period of time. So if that reason why is not strong enough, okay, well, maybe I don't need that promotion. Maybe I can go work somewhere else. Then you're going to abandon the journey, or you're going to rush what you're doing. You're going to sit for that review board. You're going to fail. And that's a huge mental load to then kind of get back up and say, yes, I want to try this again. Like I said, you know, I was not in a good frame of mind leaving there because I thought I'd failed, and like, can I even do this again to my family? So that's the other thing is, you know, if you then don't pass the first time, how do you get back on the horse and try again?
Yeah, I think that's again a very important point. I mean, if you are going for a promotion, if you're doing CPA for a promotion, and if you get the promotion, would you still pursue doing a CTA? That's a question to ask yourself if you're on that journey, right? If the end trophy is the only result that you're seeking for as part of this exam, that's probably, in my opinion, would be an incorrect reason because, you know, life will happen to you. Something is going to come up, a project is going to come up, a personal emergency is going to come up, and the motivation isn't there, then you will stop your journey. So okay, that's an excellent point. Correct. Now let's talk about the exam itself, right? The exam, I remember the OGs of CPA swear by it, saying, you know, the exam used to be tough back in the day. The newer CTAs, there's always this fight, right? The exam has gotten tougher, so who's a better CPA? Just joking, but
I had to do my exam barefoot in the snow, uphill both ways. Like, everybody has it easy now. You know, I don't know what we've done. You know, I got 10 minutes. That was it. It was the hardest thing ever. No.
I remember one of the original CTAs, when I say original, the first 100 CTAs, and they have tremendous pride in saying that they were in the first 100 CTAs, right? They're like, okay, so at the time, you just have to say standard object versus custom object. If you say custom object, there you go. You have a CTA, right? It was that easy. There's a joke that goes around.
I think the biggest difference, though, back then was you had to bring in some work experience. You had to share a case study of what you did. And that in some ways limited who could even apply, right? If you had myself, I don't think I would have had a project that would have met all the requirements of what you were presenting as a CTA. So the evolution, it's different. You know what? Me going through the old system might not have passed because I didn't have that experience. A CTA that went through the original, maybe they can't communicate the way they need to get through a 40-minute presentation and cover all the points. But the thing is, it's reflected how it's evolved over time, and we all hold the same credential. We're all minimally qualified. So I don't necessarily look at it like, oh, you know, he's a new CTA. So boy. No, look, everybody has gone through it, and it's going to evolve, and it's going to continue to evolve. I feel bad maybe for some of the new people that have to go through it or attempting it now, because there's a lot more clouds that they have to deal with than we had to do when we took it. You know, MuleSoft wasn't there, Tableau wasn't there. So there's a lot of things that change as time goes by.
Right. Yeah. Right. Now we are talking about the exam change. I think it'll be you're right, as in things are evolving with time. It's slowly and slowly new additions into ecosystems system is coming along. So definitely things are different, getting different every year. So what do you think over the years, how CPA exam has changed? Like you have done in very early stage when the whole journey was launched versus now or in the last few years, what all things have changed, and what do you think, how this is going to help the candidates in terms of when they're preparing for and what all things they need to cover?
I think in the past, you were building more from scratch in your solutions. Oh, we need to do something in healthcare. All right, we're gonna build this out this way. Or you had something to do in financial services. Well, now there's clouds that are jumpstarting that, or CPQ is now built in and MuleSoft is built in. So where before you had to be much more inventive in the different technologies you build in to use a solution, now you need to have awareness of the out-of-the-box Salesforce solutions that get you to the 80% and then what you have to do on top of it. So that part definitely has changed, where there's more that helps you get to a solution, especially if it's an area that you haven't worked in. You know, I think mine was related to waste disposal, not an industry I know, but now with all the different clouds and pieces of information that are out there, it's a better starting point for, okay, I can use this as part of the solution and then just build on top of it.
Right. Definitely. I think given all these clouds, that's a very good point in terms of for candidates to prepare that, okay, mm-hmm. don't worry whether FSC is going to be in scope or not, or CPQ will be in scope or not, but understand the data model. Understand Absolutely. The concepts, get the jump start, get ready how the data mm-hmm. model has been positioned, and then try to bring that perspective. Don't copy, but of course, understand that. So that's very, very key advice, I would say. And we also got the similar advice when we were preparing in 2019, 2020. So that's very important.
So, yeah, and I do see candidates getting hung up on specific aspects of, like, say, you mentioned, right, CPQ. Do I need to, how deep do I need to go into CPQ? Mm-hmm. Is a very high level understanding okay? Or do you need to go to that level of detail in terms of understanding data models and how the pricing should work and what the ideal product structure should look like? There is a balancing aspect there, right?
Yeah, the answer is yes. And then that's not a helpful answer, but if you're going to open up that aspect of a different cloud in your solution, then it's fair game. And as a judge, we can ask you questions about that solution to see if you are confident in it or not. So there's some times where you may decide, that's an area of CPQ I'm not very familiar with. I'm going to build it custom. I'm going to build it this way. And you might get a question about it, but if you can justify why you did it that way, hey, you know what? You're going to be okay. Maybe it's not the perfect solution, but it's a solution that works. It's a solution that's justification. It's just not as optimal as it could be. And that's okay. You know, again, nobody is going and getting every single point you can on the CTA, right? We're all just trying to get over that minimally qualified candidate bar. That's like any Salesforce exam, right? Any Salesforce exam is trying to identify, are you minimally qualified to hold the certification? You need to hit that bar. Get a point over. It doesn't matter if you go, if you get 100% on one of the exams, you're not getting any extra awards for that. You don't get a gold certificate versus the regular certificate. You're certified just like everybody else. So don't beat yourself up if it's not perfect. And sometimes I think people who are pursuing the CTA can get caught up in that perfectionism. I know I've had that problem in the past. I think I've moved past most of it, but every now and then that does kind of rear its ugly head, and you got to temper and say, no, you know what? There's a point where it's good enough and you can spend too much time trying to optimize.
I do have a question for you, Carl, and I always wanted sure. to ask you is that the approach that you took was a no-slide approach when you presented, right? And just for a little bit of context, we were watching your video in terms of how to present in the board. And we're like, this is an interesting approach. All the coaches and judges we spoke to, nobody took a no-slide approach. So we'd really like to understand, how did you come up with that approach? Clearly, it worked out well for you. But how did you get to the point where you thought going no-slide is the way to go for you?
I think there's two reasons, if I kind of simplify to why I did that. At the time when I was taking my exam, you were 2 hours in your preparation. I think you're up to the 3 now. And what I found when I was practicing was I was wasting what I felt like too much time trying to get a nice set of artifacts. Like I would write it down on paper and then I'd need to transition it. And then, 5 minutes before the end, I would think about a different requirement and make a change. And I wouldn't have a pretty artifact, right? So rather than spend extra time or waste time in my 2 hours in building a pretty artifact, I would take it down on paper and I would be able to draw and talk as I go. And the second reason was back to communication. One of the things, and you probably have all seen this, right? If you're building a presentation or you're watching a presentation, when somebody puts up a slide, what do? You read everything on the slide and you stop paying attention to them. So from a judging perspective, I had a message I wanted to get across. I wanted the judges focused and paying attention to what I was going to say so that that I could unfold my story as I went. There's a little bit of theater here, right? Like, this is what I'm doing, and this is the reason why. And they were, you know, thinking about everything versus reading ahead, doing the things that's human nature. So those are the kind of the two reasons from a practical perspective, and then from a communication perspective, that led me to no slides and elaborating a story as I went.
That's amazing. That's amazing storytelling, really. And do you take that approach in your professional life even now? Say, for example, you have a very important CX level presentation and you have free will in terms of how you want to present. Would you go completely no slide approach and talk them through your thought process, through your story, or would you take a different approach in professional life?
So I think there's a slightly different approach. I do spend time visualizing for the high stakes things, not everything, but if there's a meeting, I think about, okay, what's it going to look like? How are we going to present this? What's going to be the questions I'm going to get asked? And then thinking about my slides and what messages I want. You know, I don't always put a lot of content on slides. I will try and keep just bullet points, or I use the build features so that you're putting bullet points by bullet points so that you can focus on that one or two topics. What else is there in that situation? The messages, you know, the way things are going to be received. And I think it's a comfort level. I think you go through a progression. When you're new to something, you're like, oh, please don't ask me questions. Like, let me just get through this and nobody asks me questions. And then you get a little more confident, right? And then you're like, well, I know all this stuff, so let me tell you everything I know about this and you know, to prove that I know it, and maybe I won't get any questions. And then you get more comfortable, right? And then it becomes, well, you know what? I'm going to say less because I want them to ask the questions because, you know, I'm comfortable in responding to it. And then I'm to the point with a lot of things, especially when it's working with data, where I'm not intentionally withholding, but I'm only saying certain things because I know what I say is going to generate a specific question that I'm then ready to give the answer to. So it engages somebody in the communication more, where it feels like they're not talking at me. We're having a conversation and wow, you know what? They understand the challenges or the pain. They get me, that, you know, I asked that question and they're ready, and that makes a lot of sense. So it's what I find is, when you have the experience level, you communicate differently than when you're new to something.
Absolutely, spot on. And steering your presentation in the direction where you want to steer is a very hard thing to do, but a very, very effective strategy for sure. I like the way your earlier experience around theater and stage performance is kind of like, you know, you have that kind of backdrop to actually then, you know, and you're able to use that in your CTA board and in your real life. I think that's what listeners should, you know, pay attention to. Like, you know, you need to draw your presentation style or your approach based on your experiences, not on somebody else's. So, let's pivot a little bit in terms of internal versus external candidates that appear at the board. When I say internal, I say employees of Salesforce, because Salesforce, as you know, has a bootcamp program for CTA prep. Versus external candidates who may or may not have that level of support. Do you see any differences in approach? I know you're on the board. The way they present, do you see any particular differences that you can speak to?
Well, I only went through the external side of things, so I don't know all the super secrets that go on inside of Salesforce. I think we maybe romanticize from the outside of like, oh, they're getting all the answers. Salesforce knows everything. They just go talk to this. But from what I've heard, that's not necessarily the case. It can be super competitive. It can be very hard to get time for coaches, for time away from projects to work on it. So in some ways, maybe external candidates have an advantage because the companies are further behind them. You know, they see if you're a large SI, it's really important to grow your CTA ranks. And we're going to put a set of peers behind them. We're going to support them with study material and study time. I mean, the time's almost as valuable as anything else, because if you're working on projects for 12 hours a day, last thing you want to do is study about fake projects. You know, you're like, no, I dealt with these challenges. So that aspect of it, I don't know that there's a huge advantage or disadvantages. It's just, it's different. You're definitely going to come in as an internal Salesforce candidate with the Salesforce way, meaning the certain way that you want and prepare candidates to present. It may not be global across the world, and different regions can have different approaches, but there's some similarities there. You definitely see similarities if you're coming from certain partners that they try to have not just candidates that know how to present for the CTA, but also are building in the frameworks or approaches that they have as an organization. Because let's face it, it is one test, but you're going to do a lot more in your career that's not this test. So it's important that you fit into the company's operating model there.
Got it. And you're right. I mean, internal Salesforce employees don't get any special secrets about the exam or anything of that sort. It's the same process for everybody. It's just that they get more support. There is an official program for training boot camp, which is officially supported by the CTAs. And everybody is trying to give back to the CTA program in terms of support. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's harder for me to get time to, let's say, get feedback, especially when I was with Salesforce. It's hard to get time to get feedback on a project that you're working on versus asking them to be a judge. They're more keen to be a judge on one of your mocks than, you know, getting feedback on a project. So that was quite different. It kind of tells that, you know, it's a very respected kind of certification, even within Salesforce, and there's a lot of support. Mm-hmm. Just double clicking on that a little bit, on the point that you mentioned, is that you need to understand whether, as a candidate, whether you're suitable for this exam. I think you kind of touched upon it a little bit. Who do you think is an ideal candidate for CTA? Is there a certain personality traits that you need to have in order to become a CTA, or anybody who's been in the Salesforce ecosystem and has experience can be a CTA and should be a CTA?
I think it'll be I'll give my opinion, but I think it may be biased just based off of who I've been exposed to. So I wouldn't take it as exclusive criteria that includes you or excludes you, but you have to have that desire to learn and to continually learn. I think that's something that I have seen throughout a lot of CTA candidates, that even if you've gotten CTA, you're not necessarily done learning new things or getting certifications in or outside Salesforce. I think you have to have a propensity to really be able to understand complexity and keep a lot of complex things in your head at the same time when you're going through and trying to deconstruct these scenarios. If you're very singular task focused, that may not lead to success because of the integrated nature of scenarios. And then I think there's an aspect of communication. You don't have to be the best communicator ever in the world. But if you're like, no, I don't want to talk to people, I only want to work on this pipeline to automatically deploy changes, that's not what the CTA is about. That's not what you're going to do in your life after earning a CTA, and you're probably not going to be successful in the exam. So I would just draw out some of those tendencies to say these things are fairly common from CTAs that I've seen and can be the difference between success and failure. And I think some of the other things, people are going to come with different strengths and different backgrounds, and we have a lot of diversity. We always have more diversity inside of the program of people that have earned it. And I think that's the good thing, that it's not just one type of candidate that is successful.
I think you're spot on. I think in terms of diversity, we are seeing a lot of candidates from all over the world now. A lot of female candidates as well coming up for CTA. I think this is great. This will encourage a lot of people who are on their journey to become CTA. And we need more CTAs in this world. The world is a better place with more CTAs in it, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you go to some of the events and you get to hear perspectives from different people that have different experiences and different journeys. And if you honestly sit there and reflect on it, it definitely exposes you to things you might not have thought of, or things you took for granted. So having a wider network of folks that always want to connect with fellow CTAs and share what they did is a good thing. So it is exciting to see the rank grow and have different people from different places as well.
So it's great to see the diversity in the ecosystem in terms of people coming from different roles, different personas, mm-hmm. enterprise architects, technical architects, solution architects, going through the review board and really landing and clearing the review board. It's fantastic, and coming from different backgrounds, coming from different countries. So it's really great to see that. Now I think it's important, good to understand your perspective in terms of what career impact CTA brings on a candidate. If we start with you in terms of what sort of huge impact it might have brought in your career and helped you to really climb up in your next code.
I think the preparation helped in and of itself to give you confidence. I had a customer that's like, "Hey, come down to Texas. I'm in Pennsylvania. We want to talk through a few things about this project early on." And I went down there by myself and walked into a conference room with 24 people, and for 8 hours was grilled on sandbox strategy, integration, security, testing, DevOps, everything. But I felt very comfortable in answering those things. So I think from a confidence and an exposure perspective, it helps you there. As far as the career, I think the three little letters CTA, it earns you a lot of credibility just walking in anywhere that people are already predisposed to listen to you. And we can argue whether that's right or wrong, but I think it's the reality of what happens. So you have this microphone that you need to be very cognizant of, and you need to wield with caution, and you need to make sure that when you're using it, you also aren't stifling other voices, that you make sure people are heard on your team. Doesn't mean that you have to be the one always talking, but a lot of times it's the one that they look to you, and you can always defer and say, you know, my colleague said it well. I don't have anything to add to the conversation. So just being cognizant of what comes with it, because it definitely people look at you differently once you have that credential.
Yeah, no, that's very, very important point. And the impact on the career plus the confidence it actually brings mm-hmm. in an individual really speak in front of, like, to me, it was understanding the context and understanding the audience and then talking what exactly is relevant to the yep. person and then talking it through. Sometimes you got to talk very high level, 50,000 feet view of the landscape. Sometimes you got to talk, okay, how the branching strategy is going to work, how the environment strategy is going to work. It's all understanding the audience and then passing on the message accordingly. So that was a huge transformation in me I have seen during my journey. So that's very rightly said. So I think it's good to see all that. I think if there is anything you want to talk about, Odesiva, if there is anything you want to share, how you landed into Odesiva role, where you are, what you are doing in the current role, it'll be good to know that.
Sure. I think one of the things that's been fairly constant throughout my career is it's been B2B software. And there's been an aspect of data. And I worked with data warehouses. I worked data integration, even Salesforce. I've kind of been on the data analytics side. So Odesiva really appealed to me from the perspective of, all right, we're working with large enterprises on some of their data challenges. And something like backup and restore maybe doesn't sound as exciting, but when you move into archiving, so I mentioned the one project. I have another project for a customer that I've removed over 5 billion with a B records from their org, right? So, you know, those things are not typical projects that you get at every SI or every customer or things that you do. So what I've been exposed to has definitely opened up some of the different data challenges and ways where I can do things that nobody else has done or challenges that really make a huge impact on a customer when we overcome what they're running into on the Salesforce platform. So that part of it has been really exciting. I think a lot of times, yes, we are a product. We have a platform. But we also have the expertise on top of it. You know, you buy Salesforce, you don't always just turn it on by yourself and everything works. You go and look for those that have expertise that can help make your journey easier. And it's very similar with us from a data perspective that, yeah, we can get you up and running with our platform, but when you need that true expertise to handle something that would be very challenging otherwise, we have the folks there that can help you.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, that's great. And I think with any complex implementation, data is most critical how you design. And when you have huge volume of data, like handling billions of records, this is like crazy to even hear. And how are you going to manage with the platform? I think you're doing an awesome job. Odesava as a product is delivering awesome outcome in the ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And really great to see so many CTAs in the company who are really helping so many customers. So very well done on that front.
Thank you.
Yeah. Cool. I think with this, we will wrap up the episode. It was a pleasure having you on this particular episode, and it was great to hear your story and the challenges and the impact of CTA has brought into your life and a career, and even the end how you're really solving complex problems in the world. So thank you for joining.
Oh, my pleasure. I appreciate being here. I think my big takeaway for people is listen and make it your own. You know, don't try and emulate. I never look and say, oh, you know, Steve Jobs did this way. I needed to. No, you know, there's things that you can learn, but you have to apply it to your own situation that you're in and make it work. So definitely take the things we talked about and make it your own.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you for joining us. It was a great pleasure having you. And we hope that you enjoyed this conversation as well. And we hope to see you again soon on this podcast. Thank you again.
Definitely. My pleasure. Thanks.
So with this amazing conversation, we conclude this episode. And thank you so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed this episode as much as we enjoyed recording it. We look forward to bringing more exciting and relevant content in the upcoming episodes. Till then, goodbye.